Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to On the Dean's List, a podcast that celebrates the art of conversation with your host, Dean Latticer.
Thank you, George. Good morning, everybody. Welcome. You are on the Dean's List. I'm your host, Dean Latticer. Thanks for tuning by today. And if you're a first-time listener or a long-time friend, I am excited about today's show. Let's just jump right into it. Broadcaster, speaker, and author Allison Martinek joins us on the Dean's List for 20 years. She was a beloved part of the morning show on 96.3 WDVD-FM. And in July 2015, she was relieved of her duties without a chance for some closure with her loyal audience. And I'll tell you, this has left a void in many of the wake-up calls here in southeastern Michigan. And Allison joins us today to discuss some of the circumstances around her separation. But we're going to be positive. We're going to talk about the future, including the book that she's finishing up called Living on Air. And I'll tell you, I've been looking forward to this. I reached out to her shortly after the separation because it's just, as a former radio guy myself, I always like swapping war stories with friends, and I think I have a new one here. Good morning, Allison. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. It's so nice to say that on radio. Yes. Kind of.
That's why I even named the episode Good Morning.
Right? And I have to mention that that intro music you have was really funky. I like
that.
Thank
you. Thank you. Actually, in this day and age, I remember when I was radio, you could find a jazz or a fusion album, just drop a needle on something and have a few seconds. These days, everybody's concerned about usage rights and stuff like that, so had to go scour the internet looking for some royalty-free something on it. So, you know, it's kind of, that's part of the new world we work in here online and stuff. But being a terrestrial broadcaster, like I have to say, and I said this to you in the pre-call, I've been doing 350 or so podcasts over the last 6-7 years, various formats, including this one. Yours, I received more emails. I was at an event. Somebody came across the room, and they said, "You got to tell me. I don't want to miss it." I mean, Alma's a dear friend. She was almost vibrating with excitement on it, and I took a couple of people miss you. I've got to cut to the chase. You are definitely a beloved person. 20 years here in Detroit. I guess let's go with the 600-pound gorilla in the room right now and talk about what happened. I know you're writing a book about it, and I got to read the first preview chapter. But tell your side of the story. Take us back to July 2015, and give us the Reader's Digest condensed version of what happened.
Well, first of all, I wanted to say, just in regards to all of the feedback that you got when you said I was going to be a guest, I am so fortunate, and I feel so blessed. When I lost my job, I, for the first month, couldn't even really go near my social media or my email or any of it. It was boiling hot. I mean, messages came in. They just came in every millisecond, and I am so blessed for the support that I have, and it's still there. And I just want to just say thank you. I try to say thank you all the time, but my audience did not leave me. They actually followed me, and it still actually seems to grow. I get new messages from new people I've never spoken to before on a regular basis. So I do feel very fortunate. As to your question, and I do want to say, I'm excited to have the book done. It was cathartic to be able to write it. It gave me something to do with my downtime, and it is officially available. So if you go to my Facebook, I have a couple links, but it's on Amazon right now. So you can just type in my name. It's called Living on Air, and the book is there. And not only does it'll tell the story of what happened, but it also just kind of tells my whole 20 years. You know, there's funny mm-hmm. stories, you know, about why did Bob Saget call me in the middle of the night and in the studio on the hotline. Just, you know, random things like that. But I do know that most people are interested in the story because it was very abrupt. and it didn't make a lot of sense for my removal. So I do get everyone's curiosity, and that is addressed in the book. As a matter of fact, the way the book is kind of written, if you go to the there's two ways to order it. If you go to the one where you can get an autographed copy, you can actually read the first chapter for free. And the
which
first
I did,
chapter,
and which I did, and it's actually kind of sets a nice tone for it. I mean, you've taken the high road in this book. I want, you know, it's not one of these tell-all, name names, throw people under the bus. No, you were very genteel, and you were very high-minded in your tone in the book.
Well, and I tried to be careful with that for a couple of reasons. And my listeners who listen to my show know that, you know, I have a saying, and it's the high road is for suckers. So I'm usually not very good at that, but I didn't want to, you know, this book will last the ages, and I don't want to have, you know, I don't want to be that negative. I also, you know, want to be mindful that I can't give people ammunition to, you know, sue me. So, but I, you know, for the most part, if I didn't have anything nice to say, I didn't really say anything. There are two people that had everything to do with my not being at my job anymore, and I don't have nice things to say about them. But I try to stay vague about it. But the fact is I don't have my job anymore because of two people. And, because of those two people, and there was no other reason other than, you know, one of those people didn't want me there and spent a lot of time trying to get me, tried to remove me. I just never thought the company would allow that person to do it. Most of the time you shouldn't lose your job because someone doesn't personally like you. And the truth is that's exactly what happened to me. Somebody personally wanted me gone for a very long time.
So basically, you know, and programmers and consultants, they have their ways of looking at things. And I've run into a few in my day, and they want things said a certain way or done a certain way and such. So you know, let me just say it this way. Do you feel that this, so it sounds like somebody may be gunning for you, or they just didn't like the chemistry, or they wanted to bring in somebody cheaper? What do you think the underlying cause was?
No, I know for a fact, I'm sure cheaper probably is, you know, and I even write, there's a chapter in my book where I talk about the name of the game now is eliminating jobs and trying to save money, and it's an unfortunate part of terrestrial radio now, and it's unfortunate, and it's why things like podcasts are becoming so popular, because talent, you know, people who have cultivated their craft and are good at what they do and who have worked long enough to make a salary, they're kind of an endangered species now. So they have to go elsewhere to find a way to connect with their audience. So, but salary was never really part of it. I knew for at least 2 years leading up to it that there was a person that, and I knew, and I knew who the person was, and that person knew that I knew. And I just kind of always felt safe though, because I always knew that the company knew why we were so successful. And I had more than, you know, just part to do with that. So I didn't think that somebody would be able to personally have their agenda processed, but somebody else came in and was able to back that person. And it's all very, it was really very ugly. And I have to say, and I say this in the first chapter, on the day that I was fired, when the person came in and tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Hey, you got a minute?" I even say in the book, I said, "Yeah, sure." And I, you know, like a puppy dog, happy to see their master, I went following down the hallway, because I had no reason to think that, you know, anything but something positive would be happening in this conversation. So, you know.
You celebrated 20 years on the air there. One of the greatest ironies, I think, is Cumulus, the owner of the station. You'd been through a lot of different owner groups. You've been through Disney, and you've been through that. The day you got let go, their stock was selling for $2.25 a share. I researched it. At the open this morning, at the open bell of the stock market, it's kind of hovering around 25 cents. What do you think? Karma leveraged up to the eyeballs, bad business presence? What do you think, Allison?
Well, the company shortly after and this is the interesting thing. The company always got a bad rap, especially from inside, people that worked there, everybody. But in my case, I have to say, regardless of whatever kind of issues the company has, I was actually trying to reach out to the company to let them know, and you and I are going to talk about a very larger-than-life program director, and I can tell you how he fit into all of that. But I was one of the first. I got fired when I came back from vacation, and right before I had gone on vacation, I had had a conversation with the person who ultimately let me go, and I've been having conversations with this person for about a year, because our radio station was really being handled poorly. And I remember I said something like, I'm going to jump on a plane and I am going to fly to Atlanta, and I'm going to start addressing my concerns directly, because the relationship I had with one of the owners and a lot of the VPs in the company had really up to that point always been positive. So I kind of thought they were on my side. So that was one of the last things before I went on vacation. I said, I'm going to get on a plane. I'm going to fly to Atlanta. And then I came back from vacation and I was gone. So I think they took that seriously.
I guess they weren't listening to the show and they didn't know what a delightful sense of humor you have on it. You did allude to somebody, the program director who was there before. Some people might recognize more by their nickname, Kevin Matheny, not Pat Matheny, Kevin Matheny. Pig Virus was what Howard Stern called him when he was at WNBC. And then in the movie Private Parts, Howard and the scriptwriters kind of took Kevin and kind of made that character an amalgamation of all the PDs that Howard didn't like, and called that character Pig Vomit. Now, in your book, you talk about him differently. You don't mention him by name, and I appreciate you giving some insights. And unfortunately, Kevin had a very tragic passing. He was working. He was in San Francisco, if I recall correctly, and he was on a call, and unfortunately, he suffered a heart attack. But your memories of Kevin are different than most people's. You say
actually,
very kind and generous things.
I don't
about him.
In the chapter, in the first chapter when I talk about getting fired, I don't mention him by name, and I do say that a very famous actor played him in a movie, and that actor would be Paul Giamatti. I do, however, he's one of the people that I dedicate the book to.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still connected, right?
Right. Yeah, we're still on. Allison, hang on, I'm going to try something here. I can hear you. Can you hear me? Allison?
Hello?
Hello? Technology working here. Hang on a second. We're going to try something. I'm going to try a quick thing here. She was sharing a great story. I'm going to try something. Looks like the call has dropped. She's going to hopefully call right back in here. And I'm going to take a quick break here, bring you up to speed. Again, I thank you, especially if you're a first-time listener, for joining us. Good occasion to take a break here. Just a look coming forward. Next week's show, what debuts on a week from Wednesday, Rosh Sillars is going to join us. Rosh is a dear friend of the show, and he's got a seminar coming up on called Market Hacking. And we're going to talk about digital marketing and how to open up new markets for your business. And there, let's see if we can find Allison.
I don't know. I don't know what happened. I'm here. I don't know what happened. I was in the middle of telling that great story.
Yes. Lattister's Law of Technology, and my regular listeners know this one well. Technology is a wonderful servant, but a cruel master.
Right.
So. I got a chance to get a plug in for next week's show while we were getting you back on. Kevin Matheny, you see him differently than a lot of people. I mean, he had what he did with Howard. He also had a very, when he was at WGN, he was a strong personality, which I think you have to be when you're working with talent. But you say some, like I said, a lot of kind and gracious things about him, both in
Kevin's
the book and in person.
Kevin's one of the people I actually dedicate the book to. If Kevin had never been transferred from the radio station, everything would have been different. What happened to our radio station, I had a wonderful program director. Not Kevin. Kevin was actually the PD of WJR, but at WDVD,
okay.
I had a wonderful program director for many years who wound up leaving. And shortly, and we were number one. We were number one just all over the place. We were just a station on fire, mornings, middays, afternoons, just, you know. And once he left, you know, the people that were left to take over were not taking care of this radio station that I have loved for 20 years. And I didn't appreciate that. We're supposed to work hard. We're supposed to want to win. And I saw a lot of laziness. I saw a lot of intentional, you know, it was just the craziest thing. And subsequently our ratings started to suffer, and I knew why. I mean, I could see why. And Kevin Matheny was, he loved my show, and he actually loved me. And he was a person who, even from upstairs at WJR, could tell what was happening to this great radio station that was gradually not number one anymore, and not number two, and not number three. And, you know, we didn't get our ratings for a year and a half. No one told us our ratings. And we were running a thing in the morning that said, thank you for making us number one, without even realizing we had dropped. We weren't even number four at that time. And nobody was giving us our ratings, and no one was telling us that. And it was almost like, it's hard to say that somebody was wanting you to fail, but when you don't tell a morning show their ratings, you won't give them their ratings, and you don't tell them for a year and a half that they're, you know, sinking. So the thing about Kevin was, the last thing he said to me, and I wrote this in the book, was he knew what the problems were, and he knew, you know, what was standing in our way, and he desperately wanted to help our show because he was a fan. And he said, when I get to San Francisco and I get settled, I will send for help. And that's what he said. And I think that he would have. And our hope was that he was going to eventually be the OM of our station too, because he's portrayed in his relationship with Howard. I think it's because he is very brilliant, and he does have strong opinions and ideas. And I think that, you know, but in my case, it was all going to work to my benefit.
You know what? Thank you for saying that. That's one of the things I like, is giving people a chance to share their stuff with an audience, because, again, Howard, you know, in researching, I read some of the things that he said, and like I said, I read some of the other things, and I think we're equal parts, brilliant, and we also have places we can learn and grow. And I think it's important that people have balanced pictures on individuals. One question I've been dying to ask you about is, you and your former partner were part of the Dish Nation launch. Talk about that experience. I mean, you know, you're a radio broadcaster. Suddenly there's cameras, there's lights. You probably have to go a little deeper in the closet every morning, wear something a little crisper and sharp. And you were talking about celebrities and stuff like you usually do, but, you know, people who aren't in the market. I mean, the show was syndicated nationwide. Talk about that experience, if you will.
You know, there was so much positive about it. Again, you know, a wonderful thing can be ruined by two people that have the misfortune of having a powerful job. It's, you know, because everything else about it was such an amazing experience. I will say, I was used to being able to go to work every day with my hair in a bun and no makeup, and all of a sudden I spent an hour and a half in a makeup chair every day, and that was before we even, you know, started the show. So I had to adjust my schedule. But I talk about that in the book too, and I do kind of go into why, you know, we were kind of no longer. But I still, you know, it's so funny. We were part of that test run. Only select markets got to watch it the first year. I think eight to 11 markets. Detroit had so much to do with that show being picked up. you know, and we were told that. I mean, and when we were let go, this kind of blew my mind. When we were let go from Dish Nation, for the first couple weeks, people in Detroit went to their social media and made their feelings known. But after a while, they stopped because they still had our show. So they were like, whatever, we don't care. But the outcry went on for over a year. And what blew my mind was it came from every other state, not Detroit, not Michigan. I couldn't believe how we had made an impact on Texas and Florida and West Virginia and North Carolina. And not only did we make an impact on all those states, but one of the struggles we had on that TV show was we could never get fair TV time. The first, during the trial run, we were always kind of pushed aside for New York. And then when they brought on the Texas show in the full-time run, that was it. We were done. As a matter of fact, I was on a conference call that summer before we were about to go for the second year, and they were telling us they were adding this second syndicated show. And I remember sitting in my bed because I had to get up early for this conference call, and I knew, and I say this in the book, I knew at that moment we were done, because once this show was on, I had a feeling we were never going to be shown on TV after that. And we lasted about 2 months, and that was it. And they never gave us a reason. You know, they benched us right before Thanksgiving, never gave us a reason, just said they were doing it. They got such feedback that they had to bring us back. They contacted us in January and said, we're going to bring you back, but you're going to be a rotating show. You're only going to be every 2 weeks instead of all four. And I had gotten to a point where I was crying every single day because of this TV show, literally crying every day and feeling bad about myself. And, me and my partner talked about it. I would have maybe gone back because TV money is crazy money. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of hard to say no to. My partner felt a little more strongly that he wanted to be done. And so I said, okay, I'm good with that. And we called the producers back and said, we're done. And they said, you sure you don't want to think about this? And he said, no, we're done. And, they didn't think, you know, people in TV don't turn down TV jobs. So it really kind of threw them. And, you know, I think had we taken the back seat, the TV show is still on. The Texas show went through great changes shortly after, you know, we weren't there anymore. We probably would have worked our way back, but we were never really treated fairly. But there was so much about it that was great. I mean, we were on national, and in my book I say, you know, we were on TV at 11:30. You could watch The Tonight Show, you could watch Jerry Seinfeld, or you could watch me. And that was, you know, I was like, that's mind-blowing crazy.
That's an accomplishment. That is definitely an accomplishment. I'm watching the clock. You know how that is, and there's just so much stuff I want to hit. Let me just throw a couple of things at you. I mentioned some emails. Couple of quick takes here. One emailer said, you always sound so relaxed and confident on the air. How do you do that?
Well, thank you, first of all. For me, one of the things I enjoy most, always have my whole life in school and at parties, is I really enjoy talking to other people. And more importantly, I like hearing about them, and I like I'm a people person. And my approach when I had my radio show was we didn't do scams and we didn't do like bits. We did a lot of sitting around the kitchen table talking about feelings and, you know, what would you do, social issues, things like that. And just, you know, like you say, the art of conversation. We weren't trying to zing people or get, you know, crazy laughs. I feel comfortable because I really enjoy talking with people, and that's what my show was. My show was, hey, you and I we're going to get together every morning, 5:30 to 10, and we're just going to talk about stuff.
Okay, another quick one here. I think that's why you had the success that you had. Another quick one here, friend of the show and former guest Danielle Workman. She says that massive success is the best revenge. How can you leverage this experience to create that kind of a success?
Well, I'm in the process of trying to do that. You know, I wrote the book, and I don't know what's going to happen with it. I wrote an honest book. It's raw. It's got a lot of, you know, it's revealing, it's hopefully funny. I think there could be a lot of opportunities from the book, especially once Oprah gets a hold of it.
the Oprah factor,
The Oprah's getting one of those books. Every day I'm currently staying in touch with my audience by making these YouTube videos. I'm technically challenged, so I haven't figured out how to podcast. If I could podcast and if I can figure it out, the audience that I had, I mean, they tell me every day they're still there. I mean, I'll post a video and I'll get 5,000 to 11,000 views every time. And
there's a petition out there with 4,200 signatures to bring you back, but
Yeah, and I haven't started really the job process. I don't even really know how to go about that. I'm kind of just winging it. I'm supposed to be on the radio. I know that though. So, I know that I will be back on the radio. So right now I'm kind of the book just came out, and let's see what happens.
So you got to kick off your launch tour here with me today. I appreciate that. I really do. I mean, you know, it's fun because I've had other authors and folks like on it, but you're just, you know, radio, TV, books, you're just a multimedia darling, ain't you?
I kind of am now, Dean.
Well, you know, I think just that support has been there. I read a piece that Don Tanner, another radio guy now, the kind of the PR whiz guy, him and Matt Friedman and their agency. I mean, he came out with one of the strongest supports in the media on you. You've just, I think by taking the high road, Allison, you really ingratiated yourself to Metro Detroit and then The Nation on Dish Nation and just the things that you've done. If you could kind of put a wrap up, a big red bow on your career to this point so far, I mean, golly, I wish we could go in great stories and bring up to date, but just leave us in the time remaining with kind of a capstone thought here, because I don't want my floor director to catch us off the air in the next minute or two.
Well, first I want to say I've never met Dan Tanner, but I did read that article, and I thought that not only, you know, it was a nice article because nice things were said about me, but he's very smart, and he was really right on about everything that he said. And when a radio station has somebody who is responsible for bringing in, you know, you don't let those people go. And I don't just mean that in my case. It happens to a lot of people, but you get over your own personal issues and you don't get rid of the reason that your cookies are the best cookies in the world. You just don't do that. So, but I just wanted to thank him because I thought that was a great article. I write in the book about a program director I had once, and I use the phrase, you may not always remember something that somebody said to you, but you'll remember how they made you feel. And one of the things that's important to me in my career and in my personal life is to leave people feeling good, you know, to leave them feeling like I cared, like I was listening, like I was genuine. And I try to be that in my personal life. I try to carry it through in my career. And I think that's why people were drawn to me, because they knew that I was authentic and I wasn't faking it. And that's important to me, to be that kind of person and to be that kind of broadcaster. So I guess that's
Well said. There's only, I guess, one thing I've got left to say in the time we have remaining, and that's Allison Martyniec, you are on the Dean's List.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And, you know, that's where we're going to have to leave it today. Oh, golly, we could go another half an hour on this. But I want to thank Allison for this update. I'm sure this is a first reporting of many to come. And most importantly, it's always good to get current with great people. What a positive attitude as she changes her life and moves forward. I'm Dean Lattister. This has been On the Dean's List, the podcast that celebrates the art of conversation. Next time, Rosh Sillers is going to talk about market hacking and digital media. And if you're a first-time listener especially, check out the archives. We've got some great things going on. And until next time, it's been This Time.
Thank you.